Hey, welcome back, everybody, to our special 100th episode of Our Community. The one show, the only show that shows you the most amazing people in our community and incredible people, the things they're doing. And today, well, we've got an inspirational story for you, a big one. John Gutierrez, are you ready to tell this story here today?
Yes, Paul. Welcome, everybody, again to our community podcast show powered by the Orange County Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. I'm your host, Senior Vice President here. We have our 100th episode. We're excited to have a special guest on our 100th episode. This gentleman continues to just surprise everybody in the community by doing so much of philanthropy, giving back to the community. He supports all of our events. Mr. Mikey Garcia, who's a former professional boxer, five-time world champion in four different divisions. Not only that, but of course, he's an entrepreneur and he's currently a boxing commentator. We want to welcome Mr. Mikey Garcia. Thank you for being on our show.
John, thanks. Thanks for having me. And Paul, thank you for having me. Yeah, it's exciting. Thanks for the invitation. You know, 100th episode of your show. I mean, that's an honor in itself. You know that you guys are doing such great show, and I'm just happy to be part of it. You know, thank you.
No, we really appreciate you. I know you're a busy guy. You've been driving around like crazy today. You were with your son earlier, right?
Yes.
You had a lot going on, so we really appreciate you making some time to be on our 100th episode. You know, one of the things that I got to tell you, I did some research and it was like your story is, I mean, it's like amazing of just everything from your father, your brother, yes. Right? The boxing family that you come from.
Yep.
That we're going to get into all of that, which I'm sure a lot of people like to get into all that. But first and foremost, I'd like to just basically get into, you know, you as a child growing up in Oxnard, California. What was that like, brother?
Growing up in Oxnard, my parents were working in strawberry fields. As I was a kid, I remember both my parents coming home late in the evenings, dirty clothes, mud, stains of, you know, red, like dye, but it's the strawberries, you know, the dye just from the strawberries gets on the clothes. And, you know, they had their lunch bags or whatever. And sometimes I'd get like little chips that they had, you know, leftover chips or even like leftover like burritos or whatever that they had for lunch and they didn't finish. They'd bring them back and I'd be, you know, having some of that. Not that we didn't have food at the house or anything, but it's always like curious to go and see, dig through their lunch and see what was left over. But, you know, my parents were working in strawberry fields. So just most families in Oxnard at the time were working, you know, agricultural, strawberry fields, lemon and orange groves.
That's hard work, man.
It's hard labor, hard work.
Mm-hmm. My dad was also in the strawberry, you know, farm worker. Came here in the Bracero program many years ago. And to your point of the burritos.
Yeah.
They used to warm them up on the truck, on top of the hood, because they didn't have microwaves,
right?
They didn't
have microwaves.
They don't have access to a kitchen.
Yep.
But they're out there working very hard, right?
Yeah. So a lot of my friends, you know, family or uncles and, you know, mom and dad also worked different, you know, fields, different jobs like that. Because that's what Oxnard had. It was a lot of farm work. With strawberry fields and different vegetables, you know, everything. So now it's obviously changed a lot. You know, things have changed. There's a lot of different warehouses and different jobs. But at the time, that's what it was. My dad actually moved out there with the family in, you know, 70s or early 80s or whatever. But it was just farm work that was available. So that's what I remember growing up. My parents, you know, coming home. Even my older sisters and you know, they worked some of the earlier years with them, you know, at the strawberry fields. So that's what I remember. And obviously, as I was getting a little older, then the boxing started to kind of, you know, grow in the family. And
your father was the one that...
My dad started training. Yes, they started training fighters. And I'd go to the gym with him and watch my brother and some of the other fighters work out. But I was a kid, you know, I'm 8-10 years old. I didn't have any idea that I'd be doing it myself later.
Really? So at the time, That wasn't something that you were like, hey, I want to be a boxer like some of these folks.
No. I never thought I'd box ever like that. Like, it was kind of like I'd go to the gym because I never played other sports after school. So I'd come home from school, my parents would be getting there, and then my dad would be taking off to the gym. So I didn't stay home. I'm like, yeah, I'll just go with them, tag along. So I would go with my brother Robert and Fernando at the time. Vargas was there. So I'd tag along and just hang out at the gym.
Yeah, because I read that your dad was training Fernando Vargas, right?
Yeah, my dad took him in. Fernando was probably like 12, I think, when he started boxing. And he just came in like a kid just fresh from the street, just walking into the gym. And he was asking for, you know, what happens in here? What do you guys do? Well, train boxing. And he had his brother Roger at the time, that they both would come in, and they had a few other kids. My brother was already there, but Fernando came in, like I said, just from the street, like just random kid just walking in through the door.
And he also became obviously very successful boxer.
Yes.
For those of you listening or watching and don't follow boxing as much, very successful boxer. So here you are, you're 8 years old or so, you're going to your dad's you know, training boxing place that he works at, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or he's involved with all these boxers. When does it happen that you start maybe liking it or loving it or getting into it?
Not till a lot later.
Really?
When I would go with my brother and my dad and whatnot, I never wanted it for me. Like, it was always like, that's what my brother, my dad, that's for them. I'm going to end up doing something else. Like, my thought as a kid was, I'll end up growing up doing something, either law enforcement, military, something along those lines. That's what interests me at the time, you know, as a kid.
Interesting.
I didn't have any plans on being a fighter. And I would go to training camps with them. I'd go to training camp up in Big Bear. My dad used to have my brother Robert and Fernando up in Big Bear for training camp.
Share with people why they go to Big Bear. I know why, but
yeah,
it's the different elevation, right?
That's one of the reasons why fighters like to go to Big Bear for training camp, because of the high altitude. The elevation helps with your endurance, with your conditioning. So if you're fighting, say, sea level, and you're trained at high altitude, you're going to have more endurance when you're at sea level, because you're used to train with less oxygen. Now that you have all this extra oxygen at sea level, your body just, you know, fights through everything and you don't get tired. If you're fighting at high altitude, say you're going to go to Denver, you know, Mile High, and you're training at sea level, when you get to Mile High level of Denver, you won't last, you know.
I seen that with the Lakers and the Nuggets when they would play on TV.
Yeah.
They would talk about how they were just gassing
by
the second quarter.
Oh, it happens. And it's crazy how fast it happens. Because you could be training here, say, sea level, L.A., whatever, Oxnard, we're at, you know, sea level. Train for 10, 12 rounds, sparring good. Go to Big Bear, you'll be done in 6 rounds. Like that.
Wow.
4-6 rounds, you're gassed out.
That's crazy.
So the Olympic Training Center is over in Colorado, too, in Colorado Springs. It's also high altitude. So you feel the difference. So that's why people go to Big Bear, because Big Bear offers the high elevation. You know, the training will help you that much more. To the story, I remember going to the camps. I didn't want any part of training. I saw what they were going through. Like, it's tough work. Getting up early in the morning, go run. And I'd get up sometimes just to tag along. But then I'm like, nah, I'm trying to do this for myself. They'd be eating, you know, small portions and healthy diet food. And you're in camp for a few months. Like,
it's a major sacrifice.
It is.
People don't know what these boxers go through, right?
It's tough. It's not easy. People will see the lights and the glamour and whatnot, the day of the fight, you know, or maybe they get a glimpse of what training is like through like those 24/7 episodes or whatever, but it's still not the full experience. When you're there, I mean, it's hard work. And so I was 10 years old, 12 years old even. I didn't want to do it for myself. I got in boxing at 14. A little later than most kids that box, but it was something that, like, I was grown in boxing in a family of boxers. You know, my brothers were boxers, my dad was a trainer, so it's not like it was my first experience at 14. Like, I've been around it enough to where I came in at 14, but I already had basically like a little bit of background in the sport through my brothers and through my other, you know, friends and, you know, the family and whatnot. So my first boxing match was at 14. And
what was that like?
I mean,
do you remember, like, it was yesterday?
I fought I think it was at Carson or Commerce. I think it was Commerce.
Really? Commerce Casino?
Right by there? Right by there, okay. Yeah. They had an amateur show.
Okay.
And I was 14, and I fought the kid, and, I mean, I won. But I still remember, like, me walking out of the little locker room area that they had. It was at a gym, like a Boys and Girls Club or something.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm really doing this. Like, wow, I never thought I'd be doing this.
Were you nervous at the time?
I was a little nervous for that one. Yeah. I was a little nervous for that one.
First time, right?
First time.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I kept thinking, like, wow, I'm actually doing this. Because that's not something I dream about or had a goal from being a kid. You know, like, oh, I want to be a boxer. So for me, being there, like, walking as I'm walking, like, wow, I'm actually doing this. This is, wow, I can't believe I'm doing it. I got in the ring. We did the fight. It was three rounds, amateur fight, three rounds, two-minute rounds. I won. They awarded me the victory. So I'm like, okay, it's not so bad. I can do a couple more. And that's how I started.
Like, you know, baby steps.
Yeah. So we did a few more fights that year, amateur shows like that, L.A., you know, wherever, you know, Southgate, wherever the fights were, every weekend they have fights.
And of course, those are just for fun. It's like being in Pop Warner football or Little League baseball. There's no money involved.
No money.
Obviously, your dad's your coach or your brother's your coach, right? But it's just for fun, right?
It's on the record, an amateur record, but it's just for fun, basically, because it's not like there's any money involved or anything.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah,
it's amateur. Yeah. And what you do when they do matter is when you start entering tournaments. When you enter a boxing tournament, that especially if it's like a qualifier for like the Olympics, then you start moving into that, you know, the ones that matter.
So I read here, amateur highlights, 2003 National Junior Olympic Champions, silver medal at 125, 2004 National Junior Gold Gloves Champion, gold medal at 132 pounds.
Yeah.
So here you're working your way up in weight.
Yeah, so... It's
and it keeps going, by the way.
It's
in 2004, 2005. You win another silver, another bronze, and another gold. But I mean, you did a lot at that level.
For the short amount of experience that I had as an amateur, I did accomplish enough to, you know, get recognized and then, you know, become, you know, national champion in the amateurs compared to the kids that were doing it since like 8 or 10 with multiple, you know, tournaments and then 100 or 100 plus fights. I entered my first tournament with 9 fights.
Oh, wow.
You know, and that's the one in 2003. I made it to the very final national junior Olympics tournament. And
so you were still green compared to a lot of these kids, right?
Yeah.
Like, you hadn't seasoned yet.
I went into the tournament with 9 fights. On the course of the tournament, I think I finished with 15, 16 fights. Something like that.
Wow. Okay.
But I was competing with guys there, kids that are 80 fights, 60 fights, 100 fights, or whatever, because they've been doing it for so much longer.
Do you know that ahead of time?
Yeah.
Because that can also psych you out. Like, wow, this guy's fought 100 fights compared to me.
It kind of worked to my advantage that they didn't even know who I was.
Really?
And nobody had seen me.
Like the quiet.
It was only my second year of boxing. The first year, I did those 9 fights the first year. Second year, that's when I entered the tournament.
That's interesting.
So it kind of worked to my advantage. No one had ever heard of me or seen me. Whereas when you're in these tournaments, you start seeing the kids already. You know which ones are good. Oh, this kid won last year. Oh, that kid won the year before. Or things that, you know, like that. Oh, he made it to the finals. You know, he lost to the kid from Detroit or whatever. But no one had ever seen or heard of me. So they just assumed that it was just, okay, just some kid, you know, 10 fights, 11 fights. So what's he going to be able to do? But I'm winning.
And in all these fights, your father was training you and your brother was involved too?
It was mainly my dad.
Your dad?
Yeah, my dad was the one training me at the time. We're talking back in 2003 when I was, like I said, you know, 15 years old, 14 years old.
What's that like? I mean, your dad's your trainer. I mean, it's either got to be you're super tight and you're close or he's hard on you, right?
Like he was hard when it comes to training.
Okay.
You know, training is a serious business because the sport we're in requires you to be very dedicated. It's a dangerous sport, so you need to be very dedicated and be well prepared, you know, physically and mentally to be able to engage in a fight, you know, in a competition, boxing match.
Yeah.
And so when it came to training, he was very strict on, make sure you're running in the mornings. Get up in the morning, run before going to school. You know, get up at 6 in the morning, go your, 40-minute run or whatever, and then shower and get ready to go to school, you know, stuff like that. And he makes sure we do it, you know, like.
He was on top of it.
He was on top of it. I mean, you know.
You're talking about like a few miles? I mean, running for 40,
oh, yeah,
60?
Yeah. I mean, in 40 minutes, you're probably going to do about maybe 5 miles or so.
And that's the routine, right? As a boxer, early morning runs, and then workouts later
and then,
after school?
And then the gym, hit it. Yeah, after the gym, then we go. After the school, we go hit the gym for boxing, where you do your mitt work, your back work, sparring, all that. And that's Monday through Friday. And then Saturdays, like I said, we'd go either to the boxing fights, amateur shows, or we'd go to LA to get extra sparring with other gyms in LA that have a lot of kids, a lot of sparring. At 15, I started sparring professional fighters, you know, grown men. Not many rounds, but I'd be doing 4 rounds at a time just to start getting acclimated to a professional style of boxing.
So as someone like myself or others out there listening or watching,
sure.
When you talk about sparring is more of a professional way to continue to learn the sport, as opposed to just like brawling, right?
Yeah, so
it's a technique kind of right.
I mean,
practice.
Your strategy, whatever your trainer is teaching, the style of fighter that you are, that's what you're gonna apply in the sparring match.
Okay.
So some fighters are brawlers naturally, just brawlers, so they're gonna spar like that. Yeah. You know, but I was different, so we're gonna practice certain things. For example, I'm gonna practice, you know, keeping the distance by using my jab a lot and just straight right hand, and that's it. Well, I'm apply that during sparring to practice more.
Okay.
Or if I'm trying to use a lot of my footwork, okay, well, that I'm gonna use that. But I mean, you're using bigger gloves, so you're not really gonna get hurt, or the chances of getting hurt are not high because you're using bigger gloves, bigger ounces, which are more padded, more protection. You're using the headgear, headpiece, so punches and blows are a little more cushioned.
People don't realize that in boxing, there's so much. Not only just what they see on TV, it's the footwork, right?
Oh, most of it starts with your footwork, how you're standing, your stance. And I mean, when I'm looking at an opponent, I'm reading everything about him. I'm able to pick up almost like what they're about to do just by the way they're standing or their posture. You can kind of pick up, you know, what to expect. So feet, you know, footwork is very important in order to land good shots. You got to have good, you know, good fundamentals with your footwork.
Let me ask you this. What was it like for you to win your first big fight? Do you remember that? Was it a championship? Was it a certain fight that you were just like, wow, I can't believe.
There was a fight that I fought. I think it was like March of 2011. It was in Atlantic City. I was already a contender. I was probably ranked like number 9, 10 in the world. I had already won a few, you know, decent matches that had brought me up to a contender. But that fight, I fought a kid from out there somewhere in Connecticut, I think he was. His name was Matt Remlard. And he was, like, at the time, I think he was ranked number 4 in the world. He was undefeated, something like 22-0. I was undefeated, say, like 24-0, something like along those lines.
Wow.
So that was a very important matchup. He was also the North American champion at the time. He was holding the NABF title, and he was ranked number 4 in the world. So that was a very important matchup because that was the first time I'm fighting somebody that is ranked higher and you know, is close to fighting for a world title. And so I knew what was at stake. Beating him would put me in place, and now I'm getting closer and closer for a world title. But that fight was probably the one that kind of like made me feel like I'm ready for anybody at that point.
Let's go.
And I stopped him 10th round. He didn't come out to the 11th round. I beat him. I was winning every round. I dropped him a few times, and in the corner stopped it. He didn't come out to the 11th round. And so now I won, and I'm the North American champion, and I'm like excited. I'm like, okay, now I'm really close to fighting for a world title. That was 2011. 2 years later, 2013, I became world champion.
Wow.
Yeah.
How old were you when you became world champion?
I think I was 25.
25. What was that like for you?
Not as special as people might think.
Really?
Because Let me remind you, I was never like a dream or a goal of mine.
This is crazy.
So
this wasn't something you had planned.
It was almost like it was expected. It was like I'm expected to win this fight. At least the way I seen it, I was like, I'm expected to win this. Not a big deal. I won the fight. I beat Orlando Salido for the title, who at the time he was the man at 126. Featherweight, 126. He had beat Lopez, he had gone the distance. I actually dropped Gamboa, and he was like on a good roll. And I beat him fairly easy. I dropped him four times in the first four rounds. And then in the eighth round, he comes in pretty dirty tactic. He headbutt me.
Yeah.
Broke my nose with
a
headbutt.
I read that. I saw that.
So the doctor stops the fight because of the broken nose. But because I was so ahead on the cards, they go to the scorecards, I was winning easy.
Yeah.
So I won the fight. But if you go back and watch the fight on YouTube or wherever you might find it, you'll see that. You don't even see like an expression, like joyful expression. Like most fighters, they win a title and they're celebrating, they're crying out of, you know, emotion, out of happiness.
And you weren't.
I was like, whatever. After that, we all go eat with my family and all right. Like, whatever. Let's go home. Like, we're fine. Like,
but I think it also has to do with the fact that you, like you said, maybe it was expected also because of your father, your brother, your whole family's been around this, right?
We've been around it, and I've been experiencing, you know, big fights, not necessarily through me, but through my brother and Fernando and everything. So it's not anything special like that.
But you were realizing you were like creating your journey, your legacy, right?
Look, I was happier with other victories after that. Like more recent fights that I had,
sure, which
made more sense. So. What? Even though I had already been champion, like I said, that time, and then another time that same year, it still wasn't that special.
After two championships,
it was
you not, were still not, yeah, it was well, like,
you,
okay.
You probably never seen me
that's pretty
smile
crazy,
and
right?
jump up and down and cry, you know, with happiness. But when I did feel better and then happier and everything was in 2017 when I beat Slati Kanin for the WBC lightweight title.
Uh-huh.
That was after my layoff. I had been out for 2.5 years. I came back, and then I'm challenging for his title. That made it special because a lot of people were picking him to be the one who was going to win. They didn't think I was going to be able to, you know, come back after 2.5 years and different weight class. They just didn't think I would be able to perform. But it also made it special because it was something my dad had always kind of not necessarily predicted, but always said that I'd be champion in three divisions. So me fulfilling that for him and also winning the WBC title, which is a belt that my brother never had that one. My brother had the IBF. Fernando Vargas had the IBF and WBA. But my dad had like a thing for, we want a WBC champion at the house.
He would always put that in your head?
He'd always mention it. Just
mention it.
Just mention it. You know, oh, we were so close to winning that one with so-and-so fighter.
So-and-so,
or
yeah.
Was this, you know?
And it's a team, right?
Yeah.
It's a team. So,
so for me, being able to win that title and kind of like bring it home, like, here it is.
Like, you know? I'm the one who brought it.
I brought it. You know, yes. That made it special.
Wow.
You know, so I was very happy for that fight. That victory was you know, meaningful for those reasons. And like I said, coming off of the layoff, you know, I was the underdog. Like, yeah, I showed you guys, you know. So that's why that makes it special.
Well, for people tuning in right now for the first time, we have Mikey Garcia with us. He's a five-time world champion. Currently, he's a boxing commentator. You'll see him a lot on these boxing fights. He's also an entrepreneur. But he's won in four different division championships. Featherweight, super featherweight, lightweight, light welterweight.
Yeah.
And welterweight?
I fought in welterweight three fights. I never weighed in at the whole amount.
Is that just a heavier? Is that too small? Is that what it is?
I was too small. Yeah.
Too small. These guys are heavier, basically.
Oh, yeah. They're big. Yes. So featherweight is 126 pounds. Super featherweight is 130 pounds. Lightweight is 135. And depending on the title, it's super lightweight or junior welterweight, 140.
Wow.
So I won titles in those divisions. Then I attempted to win the title at 147, which is welterweight.
So you kept going up in weight. That's tough.
Kept challenging myself.
Yeah.
Even I was not ever a real, you know, welterweight. I was not even a real 140. But I was fighting them, and then, you know, my skills were allowing me to be competitive and win some of those fights. But technically, I'm way too small for 147.
And what makes it tough, correct me if I'm wrong, you know, I mean, you're the professional, but it's a heavier punch, right? It's
everything's heavier. Cause, right? See, so like when I fought at welterweight, I fought Errol Spence. I was challenging him for his world title. On weigh-in, I weighed in, I think, 143, 144. Yeah. He weighed in at 47.
Yeah.
The next day on fight night, I was 149. He was probably like 165 or something, because you hydrate.
They hydrate.
18 pounds, you lose, 16 pounds.
Yeah, lose the water weight.
Yeah, you lose weight as you're in training camp. But then after the weigh-in, everybody hydrates. But because I'm not physically big, like a natural 147, I only hydrated 4 pounds, 5 pounds.
Dehydrated almost.
I was weighing
15 pounds?
Oh, probably more. Oh, yeah, like 16, 18 pounds for sure.
Wow.
So that's what I'm saying. On fight night, he was probably like 165, maybe even more. So that's the difference. Because now whatever I'm landing is not going to hurt him, because he's obviously that much bigger. He can take a bigger punch. And the punches that they're throwing obviously are a lot heavier, so that has a bigger impact. So, I mean, that's the way, I mean, it is. And that's what I'm saying. I shouldn't have fought at welterweight because I was naturally a lot smaller physically.
Well, 42 fights, 40 wins,
yeah,
right? Of those 40 wins, 30 were by KO, mm-hmm, right? If I'm correct.
Yeah.
And, of course, you had 2 defeats, which is an amazing record.
I mean, I'm happy with my career. I accomplished a lot more than I ever imagined. Like I said, it was never a dream of mine to be world champion and be a fighter and successful. That was not like part of the plan, at least not when I was growing up. It became the goal as I'm doing it, as I'm boxing. Then I can see, okay, this is what I got to do. This is where I want to be. Of course, I have goals like that. But growing up, it was never the ultimate goal. But when I look back, I'm like, dude, I had a really good career. I accomplished a lot more. I even upped my dad because he always said I would be champion 26, 30, maybe 35. So doing the 35, all right, I finished that. Now I'm going to up my dad a little more. And I went to 140. And I win the title in 140. You know, so that's special. You know, I accomplished enough to be happy with my career.
Well, I know you're very humble because I've gotten to know Mikey at the golf tournaments, at our fundraisers. You support us a lot, by the way. Thank you so much for always supporting us at our youth chamber fundraisers and all of our, you know, community events we do. Even our toy drive, you were there last year. Thank you so much. But I read that only yourself, Manny Pacquiao, and Juan Manuel Marquez, in the history of boxing, you're the only 3 fighters to win titles at 126, 130, and 135.
And 140.
And 140?
Yeah.
Is that, oh, okay. So, yeah. I mean, that says a lot.
Yeah, they've won titles. See, Manny has won titles in different, many more weight classes. He won titles up to 154. So Manny, that's like a special thing that we probably will never see another fighter like Manny winning so many titles. But in the history books, Marquez, Manny, and myself are the only ones to win titles at 26, 30, 35, and 40.
Wow. What a career.
There's other champions who have won titles in similar weight classes. For example, Barrera, he won titles, I think 22, 26, 30, maybe some, I think. So Morales won titles in 22, 26, 30, and 40, but he didn't get a title in 35. So, but the ones to win titles at 26, 30, 35, and 40, just Manny, Marquez, and myself.
Well, I want to make sure we mention there's also the Robert Garcia Boxing Academy, right?
Yeah, it's my brother's.
That's your brother's.
Yeah.
And are you involved in all that stuff still with your brother?
Not
your
much.
Dad? No? Kind of moved on to an entrepreneur in business?
I stop by and, you know, I say hi, and sometimes I actually get in the ring with some of the young kids just to fool around. But I was helping with some of the other fighters as far as like the management.
Okay.
And I was also doing some promotion. When I was still actively fighting, I was doing some promotions, promoting a few fighters that are not attached to a promoter. But since I retired from boxing, I wanted to take a step back and really just take a break.
That's so nice. So enjoy life, huh?
Enjoy a little more and then the time with the family and friends. I think if I was trying to manage fighters right now or promote fighters, I would have to be 110% dedicated to them, or else I'm only hurting them. Because if I'm not going to be dedicating my time to them and really helping them in their careers, then I'm messing with their careers. I'm messing with their livelihood. So I don't want to be that guy that keeps them away. You know, right now I'd rather just step back, let my brother handle it, let them do it. In a year, two, four, I don't know. If I get, you know, the itch to be around and help more, then I can always do that.
I know we're running out of time. Pac is giving me the eye, gives me the how many minutes, but we started a little bit late, so we got a few minutes. I just want to make sure we mention, first and foremost, you know, Mikey Garcia gives back a lot to the community, and that's something that we greatly appreciate. I mean, him taking time off today to be with us here on our 100th episode. You know, we really, really appreciate you on behalf of our board, our president, our friend John Amador, who's one of our board. He's your friend and obviously knows you. And also, I know Paul brought a little cookie with the candle. He wants to celebrate our 100th episode.
That's right.
But, you know, more than anything, you know, I see you out there. And by the way, I know you have a passion for cars, right?
And well, I think every kid does at right? one time, you know, starts with the Hot Wheels.
Can we share like what your passion in the cars is a little bit?
I mean, I've had, once I made enough, you know, money. And
is it a Lambo, right, that I see?
I've had several cars, yeah.
Yes,
so,
yes.
So, I mean, like I said, it starts with Hot Wheels. I mean, as a kid, you know, you want the little fastest Hot Wheel and you got the track and all
that. So that's where it started.
But when I was finally able to afford them, I mean, yeah. I mean, now you're making a lot of money and you're financially well. Okay, let's go have some fun. I went out and started buying a bunch of different cars.
Nice.
So I've had several cars. I had a Lamborghini. I had McLaren. I have a Viper.
McLaren. Wow.
So the thing about them, they open other doors too, because networking with different people from different backgrounds. You're at the exotic car scene, you know, car shows, car rallies.
Yes,
that's a different world. But then I enjoy taking them to the actual track, like going to the track and racing the car. Like, you're racing with other people.
Wow, so you're into the racing now?
Yeah. We were. Well, I used to go to Fontana when it was still active.
Yes,
they closed it down now. They're putting something else up. But that was the track that I used to go the most, and I pretty much took all my cars there and tested them all out at the track. And
nice.
Not to, you know, try to brag, but I started doing really well.
Really?
To where...
A whole different career, right?
Yeah.
I car racing now.
We were there top. A few times I was number one in the series. So, I mean...
These are different belts you're winning, right?
Yeah, different accomplishments. I was very excited to do it. It's very fun.
That's cool.
That's really the only way you can enjoy one of those cars is at the track.
Well, I want to thank you for bringing those cars to several of our events. I know that we had a Cancer Foundation fundraiser last year, a couple years ago already, and I know you brought your car and several of your friends brought their cars and we put them up there at the entrance, and I mean, all the fans loved them, the kids, the whole families. Yeah. That was really, really cool. And most of all, what I loved is that you interacted with all of our fans there that we had, your fans, of course, people in the community. And so it just, you know, it goes to show a lot of about you as a person, you know, obviously your upbringing, your parents, who you are. And, and for that, you know, we applaud you and say thank you for, you know, obviously being the person that you are and everything you continue to do in the community.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Well, I mean, like you said, you know, it's your upbringing, my dad, my mom, you know, they taught us, you know, me and my brothers and sisters, you know, that's the most humble, you know, thing you can do, you know. There's nothing or no reason why you should feel any better different.
Yeah.
You know, that's, we're all the same. And if I'm fortunate to, you know, be able to help people, and that's what we're here for.
Well, shout out to your parents. Kudos to them and your family, because, you know, it takes a village, right, to raise a young kid. And, you know, congratulations to all your success.
Oh, thank you.
And to your family, you know, and continue all success. And we'll see you again out there, hopefully, at another event. I wish we had more time. I wish we had like 3 hours.
Oh, we can talk forever.
But we got a producer here. But, you know, definitely come out to some of our events, you know, at the Orange County Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, OCHEC. You'll get to meet Mikey Garcia. Sure. He's often supporting at our tour drive, at our fundraisers, at our golf tournament. Yep. And so thank you for being on the show. I wish we had more time. I really appreciate you coming out on our 100th show. And we'll see you soon, Mikey. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Congratulations.
Wow. Well, if you're ready to hear 100 more, we got them coming right here in our community. Powered by the Orange County Hispanic Chamber of Commerce and Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio. Streaming live from our studios here at the University of California, Irvine's Beale Applied Innovation Center.